And it's Ruminations Tuesday on this January the 8th in the year of our Lord 2013. And it's the first time this year that we're going to have our good friend, the Reverend Mark Smith, with us. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Tom. A blessed epiphany to you.
Yes.
And a new year.
Is January the 8th a special date in the church year?
It is the first Tuesday of Epiphany.
Yes. That's pretty good.
<You know.
laughs> Is Epiphany January 6th or January the 8th?
January 6th.
Yes. And so I'm glad you corrected me. I thought it was the 8th. Yeah, isn't it unusual that the very Sunday was January the 6th?
Yes, it is. That's all. I think it's always great when it does because, you know, I love that story of the wise men, you know,
the wise men, I don't know.
The magi.
No.
What do you mean?
They weren't that wise. They went to Jerusalem. If they were wise, they would have gone to Bethlehem.
Well, they were, like all of us, they would have thought that he'd been born in Jerusalem, of course.
Yes. Yeah, there's quite a bit of discussion about that, by the way. And in case you're just calling in, Ruminations, we do this on Tuesday with a pastor and on Thursday with a pastor. And the way I like to explain it, you're kind of eavesdropping on what pastors talk about at their level on various items. So neither of us knew when Epiphany was. Well, yeah, Mark did. Okay.
Don't talk for me now.
Okay.
I knew what it was.
All right. And both of us are sinful. And Mark says, don't talk for me now. I'll get you.
We're all poor, miserable sinners.
Yeah, speak for yourself. Okay, so we do have phone numbers in the St. Louis area, 505-7850, and you can call that right now, or long distance,
1-800-730-2727.
We're going to talk about something that I think will really kind of surprise you. You know, we're often wondering whether the Mormons are Christian or not. And in an article from Religion News Service by Peggy Fletcher Stack, out of Salt Lake City, here's what one of the statements says. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has acknowledged that homosexuality is neither a choice nor a sin. What was your first reaction, Mark, when you read that?
Well, it is a sin. In fact, even the inclination is a sin.
Yeah, I don't understand why people don't recognize that sins are sins of thought, yeah, word, and deed.
I mean, even the inclination to adultery or fornication,
yes,
even that is a sin.
Yes.
Or stealing. Even if you don't act on it, if you covet, that's a sin.
Yes.
Just thoughts, words, and deeds.
Which makes it even more astounding that in his temptations, Jesus never sinned.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Not even an evil thought.
So it's important to recognize that being tempted isn't a sin.
No, it is not.
No, that's a good point. But falling into that temptation, even by thought,
that's right,
would be
Eve, the first sin was not actually taking the forbidden fruit, but even wanting what was not given her.
Yes, wanting to be like God.
Yeah,
that was the thing that really got her thinking about this. So, good point. Now, what's happened is that they have launched a website to soften the rhetoric about homosexuality and allow gay Mormons to tell their stories. Now, you would think that if they don't think that it's a choice or a sin, therefore you would think that somebody doing it, they want to be responsible for sin. But what did you read in the article that kind of overshadows that?
Well, toward the end of the article, they said the LDS Church's new website reaffirms that same-sex attraction is not a sin. They say same-sex attraction is not a sin. Acting on it is. And the Mormon leaders still insist that sex should be only between a husband and a wife.
Now, this is really kind of interesting. How do you explain? What are these distinctions they're making?
Well, they're not. What they're saying, I think, Tom, is that it's not a sin to have the inclination. And
Now, we'll say it's not a sin to have a temptation, but don't you think an inclination... Now, would you ever think that Jesus would have been attracted to a same-sex person and inclined towards that?
No.
No. That would have been a sin.
Right.
So I think that's really a good word you use there, even though they don't use it. But they're saying an inclination or same-sex attraction is not a sin. Now, obviously... Well, let's agree with those who think that homosexuals are born that way. What the Mormon Church seems to be saying here, Mark, is that if you're born that way, you're not held responsible for it.
Well, you do have to, you know, you do have to distinguish between, you know, when you're ministering to people, you do have to distinguish between the inclination and acting out on it. But, if somebody, let's say somebody has that, they have that tendency, but they realize it's wrong, and they fight against it, and they seek God's help, they seek the power that comes from partaking of the sacrament, they seek the gospel for power in resisting this tendency, and they need to be encouraged and given the gospel. Absolutely. But
did you see the football last night?
No.
Champion?
No,
yeah.
I wasn't able to. I don't have cable.
Oh. Oh, yeah. That's right. It's on ESPN.
Yeah. Really missed out there.
Yeah, we took the opportunity to take down our Christmas tree, or I should say Louise did. It took her all 4 hours because I had put up 500 things. Anyway, Brent Musburger was on.
Uh-huh.
And the quarterback, I mean, it was just a wipeout against Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah, that's what I heard, yes.
But the quarterback of the winning team had a girlfriend. And they showed her. And Brent Musburger, she was, I believe, the beauty queen for Alabama or one of the states there.
Who else would it be, right?
And here's Brent Musburger, and they're showing her, and he says, wow, you know, she's really good looking.
This is the announcer. Right?
That's right, you know, the famous Brent. Brent. And he says, you know, I would tell those young guys to get out in the backyard and start throwing a football around. Now, obviously, he had an inclination towards women of beauty of that. Now, was that a sin? See, I think
Well, I mean, you know, you can't look into somebody's heart and know whether they're lusting. Lust is a sin.
Yeah.
Lusting after a woman is a sin. But you can't look into someone's heart necessarily and know that.
No, but can you imagine Jesus being an announcer and saying something like that?
No.
It just would never occur. You know, so, in fact, I looked at my wife, I said, wow. You know, I'm surprised.
She was good looking.
I said that to my wife. You're better looking than she is. and then I think she threw a star at me. But anyway, but it was kind of interesting that he would say that on the television, you know, that boldly about how good looking she was, and boy, that's really something to go after.
Well, you know, I happened to hear the other day a sports announcer after the game, they were talking to the players after the game, and one of the players called the lady sports announcer, called her gorgeous.
Yes, in fact, one of the winners picked her up and danced with her.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
And she says, boy, that's never happened to me
before.
That's
not really professional.
Well, I don't think. It was just in the glee of the moment. Yeah. I wouldn't consider that a big deal, you know. But be that as it may, sin is so rampant that you just cannot say something like this.
You have to be very careful.
Here's what I think the Mormons are trying to say is that if you're born with an inclination toward evil but don't act on it, then you're okay. It's not a sin.
That's what they're saying, but yes. I don't agree with that.
No, I don't either.
It's a sin even to have the inclination.
Yes, because we are conceived and born as sin. You know,
I mean, it's a sin of weakness. Wouldn't you agree? It's a sin of weakness to have that inclination. You know, I mean, it's hard. You fight against it.
What doctrine do we hold to they don't?
Original sin.
Very good, yes.
That's the difference.
Okay, now explain the doctrine of original sin.
Boy, well...
Yeah, we only have 15 minutes.
We have original sin. We inherit it from our first parents.
That's right.
We get it. You know, in sin did my mother conceive me, it says, Psalm 51, verse 5. We were conceived in sin. I mean, so the baby in the womb already is a sinner.
That's really important to understand that. So we do not become sinners because we sin. Rather, we sin because we are conceived as a sinner.
That's right.
It's just a natural response.
That's
right. It's a kind of a me
it's,
first.
It's we're now, made in the image of Adam and Eve, not in the image of God anymore.
There's a line in Away in a Manger I don't agree with.
Let's see. I think I know what you're talking about, but I got to remember it.
I'll start the word. No crying.
No crying.
He makes.
No crying he makes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not necessarily bad. I mean, crying's not a sin.
No, no. In fact, can you ever
remember? It's the only way a baby can let you know that they're hungry.
Can you think of a time Jesus cried?
Yeah, he wept over Jerusalem.
Exactly.
And so, wept over Lazarus.
That's right. But by the way, you know, they say Jesus wept is the shortest verse in the Bible.
That's right.
That's wrong. There are actually other verses that have less letters in the Hebrew and Greek.
In the Hebrew, right.
Than does that verse.
Oh, really?
I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I think there's two of them. Which is kind of interesting, but be that as it may, we need to be careful in using the law that we don't accuse somebody of breaking the law when it isn't a real breaking of the law.
That's right. You can't add to God's law
or
detract.
No. So being tempted isn't in and of itself a sin, but the inclination, as soon as there's an inclination towards it, that's old Adam.
That's right.
And that would be a sin. And I don't understand why the Mormons, for example, there are people who are born with a proclivity to violence. They have a short temper.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to say that having a short temper is neither a choice nor a sin? You see, from their point of view, if you don't have a choice, then it's not a sin. But then you have no choice but to sin.
That's right. That's right. We've got an inclination to overeat. We've got an inclination to, lying comes pretty easy for some of us.
And did you read the Portals of Prayer? That's our Lutheran Church Concordia Publishing House for the first or second Sunday in January.
No, afraid not.
I'm sorry, first or second day. She started the article off by saying that human beings on the average lie 25 times a day. And I called Louise in, and I said, that's twice an hour.
To check it out with her, right?
Yeah, and I said, obviously that's me. And she says, lie one. But that is amazing, 25 times a day on the average.
A lot of white lies, yeah.
There must be. Well, a white lie would be like a lady comes into church with a hat that looks terrible, and she says, what do you think of it?
Oh,
that is unique.
Yeah.
So if I ever look at you and say, boy, your wife is unique, you know, I got a real negative point. You know, we really need to talk to somebody who's a great sinner. So let's go to the phone lines, and hi, James.
Yes.
He admitted it.
Are you admitting you're a great sinner?
I am a poor, miserable sinner.
Well, good for you.
Boy, yeah, and I'm proud of it. Well, sin number two. How can we help you? James, your first time phoning in the year 2013.
Well, actually, it's my second time, Pastor.
Well, I didn't care about the first one.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so go ahead with the real one.
All right. Is it breaking the law or a Christian principle to become weary in well-doing? And the reason why I ask that, I think it's a part of our Christian ego system to do good works. And so if a Christian becomes weary in well-doing, has he lost his salt or has he become lukewarm? Could you comment on that?
Jesus says, do not become weary in well-doing. He says that.
What verse? I've never heard of that.
Or is that Paul?
Well, who cares?
Somewhere in the New Testament. Somewhere in the New Testament it says, do not become weary in well-doing.
I don't think.
Yes.
No. Well, here. Well, let me say what I was going to say here, James. James, you stay on.
All right.
How do I know for sure what is not a sin?
If my conscience doesn't bother me.
No, because my conscience is all messed up.
Okay.
If Jesus does anything, it can't be a sin.
Okay.
Now, I recall a time when Jesus, after feeding the 5,000, became weary in well-doing and had to go up to the mountain to pray. And the disciples were all these people want to, you know, no, I've come about another, I have to go preach to others and such. There's no doubt that Jesus was weary and well-doing as a human being.
Okay.
I think the text that Mark is talking about, I'll bet you the word weary wouldn't mean in the sense of getting tired of doing well-being, but don't be weary in the sense of don't ever think of it as something less than you should be doing. You know, that it's beyond me or something.
Well, could you give me a law and gospel application of that 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 13 through 15? And I think it says that you to not associate or something with it. I can't recall it, but to not think of them as an enemy. But I would like your law and gospel application of that, because we wanted to know, as we were talking about, what causes a Christian to become weary and well-doing.
What was the verse?
The verse is in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 13 through 15.
There's only 13 verses in the whole chapter, James.
Oh, in my Bible it has...
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm looking at 1 Thessalonians.
Yeah, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3.
Okay, 2nd. Okay.
Verses 13 through...
Well, there we find Mark's verse, and we'll talk about it. Stay and please listen.
Okay.
But as for you, brethren, it says, Mark, do not grow weary in doing good. There you have your verse.
No, that's not the same one I was thinking of.
Oh, really?
There's another verse that says, do not become weary in well-doing, for the time will come when we shall reap.
Well, we'd have to look that one up. But... the law and gospel, you got to look ahead of us, ahead of time. There are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. In other words, you know, they want to get money but not work for it. Now, those who are such we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. But as for you, brethren, do not grow weary in doing good. And I think the point here is that doing good would be, say, your vocation. I mean, how many times... Do you know how many people don't enjoy going to work? In fact, what is the most important day they look forward to during the week?
Oh, the weekend.
No. I was surprised.
Friday.
No. It's Thursday.
Because that's the day after hump day? Is that it or what?
No, it's the day just before they are done. They're looking forward to Friday because when Friday comes, they're gone. You know, after work, go out and stuff. So
they're looking
Thursday is really their last day of real work.
Uh-huh.
And
Friday's
fact,
a goof-off day.
Have you ever seen on Fridays how the expressways start getting busy earlier?
About 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
2 or 3 o'clock.
People start leaving early. You know, so Friday isn't the day anymore. It's, they're going to have to change the name TJIF, you know, thank God it's Friday, to TJIT, thank God it's Thursday or something. So the point that is being made here is the good that we are to be doing is always in line with the will of God. And it is wearisome to do good because it's contrary to what the world has you want to do.
I agree.
I remember when I worked on the assembly line of an automobile manufacturer.
Well, that explains it.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how people sloughed off if the main guy wasn't walking around watching you. And as soon as he came on board, he was looking. Oh, they were working hard. They weren't talking or anything. And it was kind of interesting because there was no motivation to work harder than you had to.
We've got to be motivated by the law in the secular realm, in the left-hand kingdom.
Well said. And the law means that you'll lose your job if you don't get your work done. At that same plant, I was on the assembly line, and I was putting, axles on the upside-down kind of trucks as they went by. Then they would be turned over. And I could not keep up with the job for 2 weeks. I needed a person. But once I got the hang of it, I not only kept up with it, I read 17 books on the job. I had all kinds of ways to get my task done quickly. Now,
that explains the trouble of the auto industry, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because they never were geared up properly. Okay. But there was a room all by itself. It was a large room where the really big trucks were put together, and there were like 8 guys working on it. They got full pay if they put a truck together per day. But if they did more than a truck per day, they got extra pay. I never remember one time where they never got more than a quarter of another truck done. Because the motivation, you know, was to work hard because you'll make more money. That's why the Japanese are so successful, for two reasons. First of all, the employees own the company. So
they have an interest in it.
Absolutely. And second of all, they have this also, the harder you work, et cetera, the better off you are.
Of course.
And that's what you meant by motivation by the law, hope or reward or fear of punishment. But for a Christian, we need not, the new man does not need that motivation. Because of love for Christ, and we're so happy to have a job, we're just willing to do the best we can, regardless.
Mm-hmm. Although we still need the law to keep us honest. We still need that. I mean, you're talking about the kingdom of grace. We're motivated by the gospel.
Yes. And for example, I don't know about you, but there's very little in the ministry I didn't look forward to doing.
Well, yeah. That, I'll tell you, you're very fortunate when you love
yes.
your, that's true with anybody. If you really love your work, genuinely
yes.
love your work, you're a very, very fortunate person.
Yes.
And yet, you know, you got to take the thorns among the roses. There's always things about profession or career that you may not like as much as other parts.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, every pastor, there's some part of the ministry. I know some who are so glad to retire so they didn't have to put out bulletins and newsletters anymore. And others who were glad to retire so they didn't have to go visit a shut-in who tells the same story every week. You know, you just talk to these
yeah,
people.
Right.
So all of us have different kinds of gifts and such. But for you and me, I think the things we look forward to are our Bible study and sermons.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I tell you, you know, I feel that way about it. I never resent having to preach another sermon or teach a Bible class.
No.
That, to me, it's a pure pleasure.
Then you must love Advent and Lent.
I love it.
Yeah, because you get all those
Absolutely.
Extra opportunities there. So to kind of bring this thing with the LDS church, the Mormon church, we've been talking about how they're trying to say that homosexuality is neither a choice nor a sin. They need to be much more careful in how they say that, because you got the idea that the act of homosexuality isn't a sin, but they don't mean that, as you read further on. Acting on it is a sin. But when they say homosexuality, they mean same-sex attraction. And what they don't understand is even the inclination towards that is a sin of thought.
Sure.
A lot of people don't think that sins of thought are really... And I'll tell you why. Because they measure the spiritual realm by the physical realm, the temporal realm. Imagine I'm going down the street and I come to a stop sign and I stop. And I go across driving, and a policeman pulls me over. And I said, "Why am I being pulled over?" "The stop sign, sir." And I said, "Well, I stopped fully." And he says, "But you were thinking about going through." And that's a $10 fine. See?
We'd be in big trouble, wouldn't we? Especially you.
But you see, oh, no, no, I never think of going through a stop sign.
No.
In fact, and I never lie. Well, there's two
That's
lies
That's lie
right
number
there.
Four.
Yeah. This is only half an hour, and I'm over the average. And I'm on the radio. I mean, you know how many people are listening to my lies? At least 5 or 6. Okay, so...
That's number 5.
Yeah, you're really good at pointing out guilt in others.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. You're a trained pastor.
You're pretty easy, too.
Oh, my. Okay. Boy, I sound like my wife. All right. It is, you know what I think they're trying to do? I think they're trying to show a friendship towards these people caught in the web of homosexuality. And they're doing it in a wrong way by saying it's not a sin. It is a sin, but that doesn't mean that you still can't treat them with love.
That's right. Oh, absolutely. You know, we, I mean, our hearts should go out to the
that's a good
to
point.
The penitent person, any person, whether he's homosexual or an adulterer. Our heart goes out to that person who struggles with it and know it's wrong. You know, you think of the alcoholic that struggles with his sin. I mean, we need to be supportive and encouraging to these people, and where they fight against it, where they repent, and they seek God's help and the encouragement of other Christians. We need to by all means reach out to them and assure them of our support and prayers.
And I think that's what the Mormon article was trying to do. Unfortunately, though, it went against the scripture where it says even the inclination to homosexuality isn't a sin, and God, of course, does think that it is a sin. I can't get to any more calls. Sorry, those of you who are on. We're off the air. We're in a couple of seconds here. Mark, your worship service times.
Yeah, 5 o'clock Saturday and 9 o'clock Sunday morning.
When's your first Lenten service? You know?
Oh, that's February the 13th. I think that's Ash Wednesday, 13th of February.
Wow, okay. And God willing, you'll be with me next week.
Right.
By the way, I'm back on at 4:15, folks. For the Sunday School lesson with Issues, Etc. God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.